Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. On Monday, two women accused California Assemblyman Matt DeBevna of sexually harassing them, and this comes on the heels of Assemblyman Raul Bocanegra resigning after multiple accusations of sexual misconduct. The Assembly has since held a subcommittee hearing looking at what policies it does and doesn't have in place handling sexual misconduct and harassment. And joining us now to talk about this, as well as other news, is Speaker of the State Assembly, Anthony Rendon. Speaker Rendon, good to have you back with
us. Good morning. Thank you.
Morning to you. Let me begin first with the Bocanegra. He's offered to resign. He said he would resign by September 1st, but he's off now, and you've taken him off of some of the leadership positions, stripped him of committee assignments. But there's some concern about, in fact, I think it's Christine Garcia who said, why does he set the timetable here?
Well, actually, he has resigned. He resigned last week. He's no longer a member of the State Assembly.
That's it. He's gone.
He's gone.
Okay. And what about what we're talking about now with a new case? The new case is really not to be – has not – there's, again, a timetable here that's been set, isn't there, in terms of a resignation?
With Mr. DeBevna, no, Mr. DeBevna has not offered to resign. Where the allegations that were made against Mr. DeBevna on – I believe it was on Monday, are being investigated by...
He's denying them, in fact.
Yes, exactly. He's denying them. So we're hiring a private law firm, which is our current practice, to investigate those allegations made against him. He has no longer the chair of the Banking and Finance Committee.
I was getting confused with the two. I mean,
exactly.
So much of this, he stepped
right
off of those committees. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Mr. DeBevna is no longer the Banking and Finance Chair pending the outcome of this investigation. Mr. Bocanegra is no longer a member of the State Assembly. He resigned, I believe it was about a week ago.
So if the investigation comes through with corroboration, you will ask him to resign?
Yes. As I said originally, if the allegations are found to be true, I will ask him to resign. If he refuses to resign, then, as I also said, I'll be the one to make the motion to remove him from office.
And you are pretty much confident about this investigation in terms of where it's going and how it's going?
But the investigation just began. Again, this is Wednesday. The allegations were made on Monday. So we've hired an independent law firm to begin looking at the investigation, to start the investigation, and the fact that it's an independent law firm, separate from the Assembly institution, I think will help to make sure that it's that the neutral party will conduct an investigation that's fair.
And the Assembly is doing what in a more general sense?
In a more general sense, when I became Speaker, I noticed right away that our policies and procedures relative to sexual harassment were quite outdated, I believe at least a decade old. We actually didn't have policies and procedures relating to sexual harassment until 1992, 1993 in the State Assembly. So I established a committee about 4 or 5 months ago, I believe it was in June, to look at our policies and procedures relating to sexual harassment. Laura Friedman, who represents the Glendale-Burbank area, is the chair of that committee. She started reviewing our sexual harassment policies and procedures. And then, obviously, when this nationwide scandal broke, there's a greater sense of attention paid to this. So they had a hearing late last week, and they will have another hearing in January to begin looking at our policies and procedures. And I think that's an important part of making sure that our culture in the Assembly, as well as our policies and procedures, are up to date.
You really have to change the culture, don't you?
Absolutely. I think we found in the United States and work environments in general and as a country, we have a long way to go. We've certainly found that in the State Assembly as well. Our hearing last week that Ms. Friedman
in the Senate with Tony Mendoza.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's a problem that's unfortunately pervasive throughout our society.
And again, we're talking with Speaker of the Assembly, State Assembly Anthony Rendon, and we will get you involved with any questions you may have for the Speaker and any concerns you may want to bring to the fore here. But let's just talk for a moment about the tax plan, because I know you have some strong passions about this. In fact, you were quoted as saying it puts the screws to California, plain and simple. I think I have that verbatim.
I think you do. It puts the screws to California. It puts the screws to New Jersey. It puts the screws to New York. It puts the screws to a lot of blue states, which I think is probably not an accident. The tax plan is anti-student, it's anti-homeowner, it's anti-veteran. It's a plan. I was having dinner with my parents on Monday. My dad, who's a veteran, who's retired, they're on fixed incomes. My dad was worried about the impact that it's going to have on him, not being able to deduct your housing tax credit will have an impact on seniors like my parents. The removal of the student loan deduction. I went through California's higher education system, the Cal States, UCs, all of that. That'll have a long-term impact on our citizens as well.
And what's to be done, especially for Californians?
Well, I think we need to fight back. Unfortunately, our California Republican congressional delegation hasn't joined that fight. We know that Republicans in New York, Republicans in New Jersey have stood up against this tax plan, which is brave. It's standing up against their own party, and it's standing up against their own president. Unfortunately, only a few California Republicans seem to have the courage to do that. We've heard stories. We know it's been reported in the popular press that Republican donors told their told members of Congress, they said, quote unquote, don't call me asking me for campaign donations if you don't vote for this tax plan. So it seems as though a lot of Republican members of Congress are listening more to their donors than they are to working Californians.
Let me also talk with you, if I might, about single payer, which essentially, from the standpoint, I suppose, of the Nurses Association, which put it forward and was strongly behind it, you decided to go against. And now I believe there's a recall effort, in fact, as a result of this, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say I went against single payer. I went against there was a single bill, SB 562, which was a bill that was came from the state Senate. It was a bill that was woefully incomplete. It was a bill. Imagine a bill that comes at a price tag of $400 billion, but doesn't identify a funding source. Just imagine that. Imagine a bill that doesn't say where you're going to come up with $400 billion. I worked in the nonprofit sector for 20 years, providing early childhood education programs, providing gang reduction programs. Imagine me coming from that background and having a bill that doesn't describe a service delivery mechanism, doesn't talk about how services are going to be provided. It didn't talk about the fact that we needed to get a federal waiver from the Trump administration to spend our federal health care dollars. It didn't talk about the GAN limit. It didn't talk about how we go around our Prop 98 obligations. It was a bill that was woefully incomplete. So I had already set up a select committee chaired by our health chair, Jim Wood, and by another colleague, Dr. Joaquin Arambula, who represents Fresno, who's an emergency room doctor. I had already set up a committee earlier in the year to look at how we achieve universal health care. I've always been a proponent of single payer. I've always known that we need universal health care. I saw that in the nonprofit sector. I saw the impact that has on families. But I want to do it in a realistic way. I think the bill, SB 562, was a symbolic measure. It was a symbolic measure that would not have provided any services to anybody the way it was written.
Their concern, though, that is, for example, the California Nurses Association, is that this is going to put more in the hands of the insurance industry again. And that's what I guess you've been criticized for mainly in terms of, I mean, you just explained rather, I think, thoroughly why you were opposed to it and why you're not opposed to universal health care, quite the contrary. But some see this politically as a kind of divide between the Bernie people and the Pelosi people in the Democratic Party. Can you comment on that?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, first of all, we've always had divisions in the Democratic Party. You go back to the Civil Rights era, which was it pitted to an extent Southern conservative Democrats against Northern Democrats. You go back to the Vietnam War. There have always been divisions in the Democratic Party. That's nothing new. What I'm interested in is programs that actually work and programs that will actually have an impact on people. For me, that's not ideological. For me, that's really about my job, which is to make sure that the state of California is taking care of its citizens.
And speaking about taking care of the citizens, let me just touch on something else that I know is very important to you, and that is those who are not citizens, or those who are citizens by birth, the children of non-citizens, dreamers. You've come out with some strong statements about DACA and about essentially protecting the rights of these young people.
Right. I think we've done a great job in this state of protecting DACA and dreamers. And the state legislature in particular has been aggressive, and the governor has as well. I think what we're doing here in California, including $45 million in the budget for legal assistance to those folks, is important. You look at a district like mine, which is about 83% Latino, and you think about the impact that the DACA kids and dreamers have on my community and throughout the state. These are folks who were born here, who are as American as you and I, and whose rights need to be protected.
And we're talking about, I mean, I was looking at kind of the stack up of what has occurred under your watch so far, and there has been movement on gun control, on tobacco restrictions, $15 for minimum wage, but also expansion of Medi-Cal to cover the children who are here illegally.
I'm incredibly proud of all of the work that we've done. I think the last 2 years have arguably been two of the three most successful years in the history of the California legislature, certainly the most progressive in the history of our legislature. You mentioned the five most restrictive gun laws in the history of the United States were passed out of our legislature. The five most restrictive anti-tobacco bills came out of our legislature. There was a 78-year battle to give farm workers overtime rights. That came out of our legislature last year. $15 minimum wage, first state in the country to achieve that. So we've accomplished quite a bit, and I'm proud of our accomplishments. That being said, we know I spent 20 years in early childhood education. We live in a state where there are 2.5 million children living in poverty. That's grotesque, and that's something that needs to be addressed. So as much as we've accomplished over the course of my 2 years as speaker and our my 5 years in the legislature, we know we have a long way to go.
Talking about what the legislature has accomplished and hopes to accomplish under Assemblymember Anthony Rendon, who is Speaker of the California State Assembly, and we started off talking about sexual harassment, also bringing up single payer and the Dreamers. And you may want to weigh in here, or if you have questions for the speaker, we'd like to hear from you. Let me give you the toll-free number. You can call us now at 866-733-6786. Toll-free for your calls. Again, the number 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We'll go to your calls here in just a second. I want to read a comment, though, and get a response from you, Speaker Rendon. A listener writes, I heard recently from someone who has worked in and around the Capitol community for decades that some politicians' offices were designated as safe houses, where women who had been harassed or attacked could be moved for safekeeping and be at a safe distance from their attackers. Does Speaker Rendon know if this is true?
No, not to my knowledge. I know that when there are complaints about sexual harassment in the building, we go to those offices where the complaints have happened, and we talk to the staff, and we make sure that they're comfortable, and we ask them if they need any accommodations. But as far as quote unquote safe houses are concerned, I specifically don't know about that.
Let me go to our callers next, and we go first to you, Susie. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I was a delegate to the Democratic Party in the early 2000s. We put single payer on the platform of the Democratic Party. It's been there for years. What I don't understand is, if this is supported so much by you Democrats, why is it not taken seriously? Why don't you have a full discussion? Why don't you try to get this passed in the legislature? I know that the Senate didn't have the full bill. We all know that. And there still are a number of amendments. There's been an economic study by Dr. Poland, an economist back east, on this whole bill and how it would save money. There is so much research on this. Please tell me why the Democrats are not doing this. The majority of Americans now support it.
Let me go to Assemblymember Rendon on this.
Sure.
If you would.
I'd say we absolutely are taking it seriously. That's why I established the select committee back in it was either February or March, to look at this specific issue. That being said, as the caller acknowledged, the details were missing from SB 562. We all acknowledge that. I've implored the California Nurses Association. I've spoken to the authors about making amendments to the bill that would make this a real workable bill. I've spoken to
them. Forgive me, Speaker. With you, it came down to really understanding the revenue. Like you said, $400 billion. Where is that going to come from?
Right. You're right, but it's not only the revenue, but it's also the service delivery mechanism. How does this happen? How does this work? If you were to implement any sort of system, let's say a system through the Department of Motor Vehicles to implement a new license plate, you would have not only how you pay for this, but also the distribution, how it works, who passes out these license plates, for example. All of that was missing from the bill. The most basic elements of any sort of meaningful public policy were all missing from the bill. And it's also important to know that there are certain mechanisms within our government. For example, Proposition 98, for example, which says that we have to have a certain proportion of our state budget that has to be spent on education funding, for example. In order to implement a single payer program, we would have to go around Proposition 98. This bill doesn't say how we go around Proposition 98. In order to increase the spending that we would need for this program, we would have to go around something called the GAN limit. The GAN limit, we are required to follow the GAN limit. This bill didn't say how we go around the GAN limit.
What about the symbolism, though, of saying, you know, we support this, we'll figure it out later, which is the way some legislation actually gets done.
Right. And that's obviously what the Senate did. Look, as I've said, I worked in the nonprofit sector for 20 years. I've seen the positive impact that real services have on real people, whether it's early childhood education and seeing the impact that has on kids moving forward, whether it's gang reduction programs, which I ran, and seeing the positive impact that has on these kids moving forward. What I'm interested in is real solutions to real problems. That was missing here. If you talk about this, the caller talked about single payer. I'm quite good friends with Sheila Kuehl, who wrote a single payer bill a couple of decades ago, and that was a more robust plan. But there's so much missing from this bill that it was symbolic only.
Is it possible? I mean, I remember interviewing Sheila Kuehl on that bill. Is it possible to resurrect it and bring it into the more contemporary vein?
That's something. If the California Nurses Association, if the authors of this bill wanted to do that, then that was something that we could look at. That being said, the bill would have to talk about how we get around Proposition 98. The bill would have to talk about how we get around the GAN limit. The bill would have to talk about how we get the Trump administration to give us a waiver for how we spend our federal health care dollars. These are complicated mechanisms that are missing from the current plan. And if we're going to be serious about having an impact on people's lives, then we have to make sure that any single payer plan is inclusive of those things.
So in the meantime, you got a recall that needs 20,000 signatures, and you got about over a million in your war chest. I think it doesn't seem likely that this recall is going to go through. But what do you say to those who feel that you should be recalled?
It seems to be the recall seems to have been driven by a group of folks from outside my district, who are obviously upset about the underdeveloped single payer plan that we've been talking about. I'm not really concerned with the recall effort. I'm going to continue to do my job on behalf of the people of my district and on behalf of my colleagues in the state assembly.
Let me bring some more of our callers in, and let's go next to you, Corey. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I wanted to ask you a question regarding Proposition 209. And before I get into the question, I just wanted to make a brief statement. I am a minority business here in California, and we are experiencing some extreme conditions out here as it relates to being able to ascertain fair opportunities for procurement. Most of that, which is related to Proposition 209, which has pretty much turned California into a modern-day Jim Crow kind of state. And I wanted to ask the gentleman, you know, first of all, what is his thoughts on Proposition 209? And is there any way to garner his support to overturn this proposition? And to also ask, is there any hope for bringing back racial equality in California, being that, you know, there's been a precedent set in the whole entire country to remove racial equality? We're seeing the federal government move, away from doing DBE programs. And it's been a decimating effect on African-American communities. And it's kind of sad to live in a state to where you don't have a fair opportunity to work, you know, and on terms of federal projects or state projects. It is a nightmare out here.
Well, Corey, you made a pretty strong statement there saying California is like a Jim Crow state. I don't know that the speaker would necessarily concur with that. But what about 209? Your thoughts on that?
Well, Prop 209 and it's some of my sort of formative political experiences in college were protesting against Proposition 187 and protesting against Proposition 209 and working on the no campaigns opposed to those measures. I serve on the Cal State Board of Trustees and the UC Board of Regents as Speaker. I have spots on both of those. I've seen the detrimental impact that Prop 209 has had on enrollment figures in both institutions. Corey's right in terms of the detrimental impact that Prop 209 has had on our state. With respect to overturning, repealing Prop 209, I think what's really important that voters, that Californians need to remember is anything that voters approve, voters have to unapprove. So Prop 209 was passed by voters at the polls. The only way it can be undone is for voters to undo it themselves. That was a problem we had with Proposition 8 as well, which obviously was a little bit different because that went to the courts and it was deemed unconstitutional. But I would absolutely be supportive of undoing Proposition 209, but keep in mind that it would have to go back to voters.
And let me thank Corey for the call and go right to another caller. That's you, Bill. Thanks for waiting. You're on.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Speaker, I have to tell you, I'm an emergency room physician myself, and I see our ERs flooded with people with untreated medical conditions and mental health conditions. And I don't understand, maybe you can explain why, a single-payer bill is being held up at this point. Why aren't we moving forward with it? Why isn't the Assembly adding the necessary amendments that would be needed to address those concerns that you have about the financing? As previous caller mentioned, there was a recent fiscal study done by a reputable group. Why not go ahead and move that bill, SB 562, forward now, because there's such an urgent need? Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
I appreciate the call and the question. And you're right. I spent the biggest employer in my district is St. Francis Medical Center, which is not only has emergency rooms, as you described, but also is also one of the sites of one of the handful of trauma centers in Los Angeles County. The situations that you described are similar at St. Francis. You're absolutely right. We need universal health care in this country. We in this state, we certainly need a single payer program. I think I've talked at length about the fact that the dollars aren't outlined in this program, in this bill. The service delivery mechanism isn't outlined in this bill. Proposition 98, GAN limits are not discussed in this bill either. I have spoken at length to the sponsors of this bill. I've spoken to the authors about making the necessary amendments. That obviously hasn't happened at this point. I would be happy to reconsider the bill once it's anything more than symbolic. If you are really concerned about making sure that our emergency rooms are functioning properly, then implore the sponsors to put the necessary provisions in this bill.
Let me thank the caller and remind listeners that we're talking to Speaker Anthony Rendon about the latest news from the state capitol. We started off talking about sexual harassment. I want to make it clear that Democratic Assemblyman Raul Bocanegra said last week he would resign immediately in the wake of allegations from multiple women that he made unwanted sexual advances throughout his career in state government. And Democratic Assemblyman Matt DeBobne is facing an accusation from a Sacramento lobbyist that he followed her into a bathroom, masturbated in front of her, and urged her to touch him. DeBobne has strongly denied the allegation. Let me bring a listener's comment in here, Anthony Rendon. We're getting a lot of these kinds of comments about climate change and goals and so forth. This listener, Kathy, writes, what are your goals for the legislative session to keep California's climate efforts moving forward? And will you ensure to bring up SB 100 for 100% clean energy by 2045 for a vote in the assembly?
We had a great year with respect to climate change, obviously. The passage of SB 32 a couple of years ago and our new achieving our climate goal, our climate change goals this year. We were well represented at the climate change conference in Bonn. Obviously, our hands are now tied by a Trump administration that I quite honestly don't believe believes in climate change, or at the least doesn't care. As far as SB 100 is concerned, that's a bill that was referred at the end of session, I believe, to our Utilities and Energy Committee, and I believe was withdrawn by the author. It's a bill that would ensure that we 100% of our resources are renewable resources.
Would you support 100?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's a bill that I think is important, and it's something that the state needs to be moving forward on.
Well, I wonder what you say to Enrique, who writes about, we mentioned your work on behalf of gun control. He says, your infringements on the Second Amendment are unconstitutional. You are out of step with the nation. And your civil rights agenda is why Trump is president. Why can't you guys get on the right side of the Bill of Rights?
I would tell Enrique that he's wrong. I would tell Enrique that the vast majority of Americans support gun control.
We'll try to get another call. Well, actually, I want to ask you about your hopes within the next legislative session. I mean, in terms of what's in the offing and what you hope to accomplish.
In the year ahead, I think what's really important for our institution is to look at oversight and accountability. When I became a member of the State Assembly in 2012, my first responsibility was chair of the Committee on Water Parks and Wildlife, and this was a time when our state parks department were quite frankly a complete mess. And we conducted extensive audits of state parks and their spending. My next assignment was as chair of the Committee on Utilities and Commerce when the PUC was having similar problems. And I think engaging in oversight and accountability is something that we're going to dig in deep next year.
Speaker Rendon, thank you so much for joining us. Anthony Rendon is Speaker of the Assembly, and we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Stay tuned. We're going to go to NPR for coverage on President Trump's speech and the move to Jerusalem as the site of the American Embassy, which is expected from the president's speech. Thank you for being a part of this morning's program. And for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.